Go to thecognitiverampage.com. Keep fueling the change. Help continue to allow this to happen. None of this would happen without you and your love and your support. Love you.
The Cognitive Rampage, a scientific approach to self-discovery, change, and life optimization, is now available on Amazon. What I do in the book is I fuse the latest research from the cognitive, behavioral, social, environmental, and biological sciences. It's not just motivational fluff and wordplay. Now, I do talk about my own story, so there's some kind of inspiration in there, but I'm not just spinning words and hyping you up with motivational fluff. Whether you need a life change, simply enjoy self-exploration and optimization, want to discover new hidden passions, or reduce the life-altering effects of toil, anxiety, depression, all of those issues, this book is for you. This book is not a cookie-cutter method of steps to follow. You'll customize the scientific framework with your own personal beliefs to build your authentic change. That way you assimilate it faster. It's not just copying my beliefs and telling you step one, step two. These will come from your beliefs as how you extend and build the foundation upon this framework. You'll use this framework throughout your whole life, through every change, and through every age. These are not empty words of motivational spin. This book is an experience. The Cognitive Rampage is based in science and is built from your beliefs. It's a path to help you unleash your desired change. You can apply this method on your own with no harmful side effects. Welcome to the Cognitive Rampage Podcast. Hope you take care of you. Hope you live in your Cognitive Rampage. Yeah, said it again. You know, Sam holding his phone over here. You can see if you're watching live, but no notes. No notes on this podcast. You know, life doesn't give us time to make notes. We can make notes along our life, really, but, you know, we don't have time to prepare, if you will, and make those notes for what may happen tomorrow, what may happen the week prior. We can just take notes after that, perhaps, but no notes. The whole point was no notes on this podcast. More than likely, there's not going to be any more notes on the podcast because, you know, the truth is, I never did this podcast with notes. Frankly, that was the flow and the fun of it, honestly, is not preparing, not getting ready, not doing what I was supposed to do is why this podcast was fun. And you know, I'm not going to go into the transition away from the Cognitive Rampage to the Fight Life. The Fight Life is a idea unto its own that will morph and grow as it needs to. The Cognitive Rampage has taken a long time to develop into what it is, what it's been through, what it was at one point, what it became again, and then what it wasn't. You know, the truth is it gets hard, people, even for myself, to keep grinding at something like this. But the truth is I do this because it helps me, and I know it helps some of you. And helping people helps me. Helps me a lot. It's something I recommend. It's something I recommend you dose daily and often if you can, and find that way to do that. And for me, when I began to deliver this podcast a long time ago at some point, this was how I helped people. Especially since I stopped being a therapist, right? I still wanted to reach out and help people. And well, that's what the Rampage did, and frankly, it was fun. It was fun for me because I could find flow state. I could just let my mind go. It wasn't noted. Even interviewing people wasn't even the begin design. I just frankly didn't have enough confidence in myself that I could probably deliver for an hour, hour and a half, right? But then as you create a brand or a podcast, as any brand or podcast may or may not develop into, a lot of times what the brand should do or shouldn't do or supposed to do begin to kind of vaguely go across from why you started something and why you did something. And I certainly fell prey to that. I certainly fell prey to way more influential people than myself, giving their honest opinions about a direction to take it, to try this, to try that. And I talk so much about trying to be humble and listen that a lot of times you can get lost in that humility, that you forget to listen to yourself and what you decide or what you want to do. And that happens to a lot of us all the time, really. And all the time is something I normally wouldn't say, but the truth, it can feel that way, right? And so we listen to our influencers or people that are good, and a lot of times we can take that, but we lose ourselves in our own advice that way. And I'm not blaming all on that, because again, in the end, it's our choice to adhere to that advice, to do anything with it. So in the bottom line, at the end of it, it's up to us anyway. So as it morphed and changed for missions, for reasons, for why I did it, and I would get so entrenched in goals, right, let people know about addiction facilities, right, that I even crossed over the line, you know, into certain ways. But, you know, it shapes and founds itself. But, you know, as it got this far for me, I forgot, well, the fun. I forgot the fun in the helping, the fun in just having no notes, right? I used to, that's why I always encourage people to go live in the Tribe of Change. It's not because I'm just trying to poke at you and see what you'll do or anything like that. I just know it can be exhilarating to a point where it's nervousness, right? You got to prepare something. You think you got to have a title or notes, if you will, to do something like that, right? And for me, I kind of say, hey, you know, life doesn't give us time to prepare, like I said in the beginning. So just go live. Just cut it on and go, right? And only because I'm trying to deliver a certain dose of that feeling, you know, being able to do that. And so for me, going on live and turning on the mic and not having notes or a topic or even in my mind at times, no one to interview. Right, no one to at least banter, ask questions back and forth, even as the Rampage went through that little realm of interviews off and on for a while, then none for a while. You know, you get lost in the shuffle and the noise of trying to book the same people that other people want to book. It becomes this, wait a minute. Why did I? That's right, this is fun. It's fun and I like to help people and it helps me. And, you know, you hear people say that, and they love to talk it now too, right? Hey, I'm doing this to help me, right? They know enough not to be cliche to say, hey, I'm just trying to help me, even help somebody else. Well, then great. Well, if that's so, how come you charge everybody to be in your group? So, I mean, there's arguments to this, right? So for me, it was about sitting down, trying to find flow, as I later learned that this state was from guys like Stephen Kotler, who was kind enough to come on the show a couple times, and you know, a couple other people, Jamie Wheel, his partner as well. You know, I got into the flow thing, is what it would be called. But for me, this flow thing is a great hashtag or a new thing to be calling a group of symptoms. It's cool. And healing into a way. But I was freestyle rapping for a long time, and I still do, and I used to do it back then. It would be funny, it didn't look like the guy that would do it, and I'd just say it. So for me, I found, I don't know, flow there, as you'd call it, you know, and being able to do that. So for me, getting on the podcast, once I had learned how to help some people, I wanted to do that, right? So I wanted to be able to sit down and kind of just cognitively rampage, you know, what I had learned, etc. And along the way, too, I also took under my scope, if you will, or my magnifying glass, the idea of motivation and inspiration, right? And the literal terms for these words, and I walked down them and rationalized them, broke them down to no meaning or what have you, and how, you know, they're not real, almost to a point. But for those that believe in what those terms are by any definition of their own, well, then those words can become real no matter what science says, right? So for me, it's real, right? And trying to flow that way and sit down and just go and go back to what's fun and, well, I guess helps people, because a lot of you really reached out, been really active in the tribe as well. So supportive. Thank you for all that. And, you know, I posted the other day in the tribe, it's hard to stay off the mic. And then I toiled for a while about, well, why the fuck, right? Why am I not wanting to do that? And finding ways to rationalize. And I said, no, forget that. I'm back to what it was, which is trying to help me, help you, flowing, but also motivation and the inspiration, because those words mean something to people. They mean something to me, and we can break them down, and I walk down the road, trust me. You can just start with a book called Tyranny of Words by Stuart Chase, and these are fucking concepts that break down life to the most rational point of being, to where sometimes we can lose the feeling and the meaning in those analytical thoughts, right? And so trying to bring back the motivation and the inspiration to also how I used to do this podcast. If you're brave enough to go to the YouTube page, we don't broadcast a lot on YouTube. We just kind of stored our videos there early. We pushed everything to iTunes from the very beginning. But if you go all the way back to some of the first episodes, you may find some older pictures back when I was a little bit thicker. I had some muscle. I was lifting a lot. I think I was even rocking a mohawk. But with that mohawk, I'm wearing a sports coat and a jacket. I swear I used to be a therapist with a mohawk in addiction facilities. had to just kind of get into it, right? But if you're brave enough to go back and watch those videos, done terribly. The production is awful, so I apologize. The sound's awful. I'm standing at a 8-foot distance from the laptop microphone as I pace frantically, trying to give lessons about cognitive psychology, behavioral psychology. But what you will see there is an enthusiasm. What you will see there is somebody that was passionate about trying to help somebody. And I went back and happened to look at those when I was kind of cleaning up, ready to kind of pack in the YouTube page. And I said, man, look at that. There's even an old interview with Leo Dannenbaum, the best counselor on the planet, by the way, period, end, period, forever. Superman, if you will, in the psychology world and the helping people realm. Seriously, shout out to you, Leo. Basically, if you've read the book, he's my mentor. I mentioned many times. But man, I even scrolled off. I got to talking about Leo in the book. Totally forgot. See, this, now don't start screaming notes on me. I forgot. But anyway, back to the motivation. Oh, watching the old. I see. I got you. Give it a second. There's even an old episode where he and I would sit down in the private practice office there, and you would, I don't know, one, I wanted to help so badly, right? And they're pretty terribly, again, they're terribly produced, okay? Secret, the microphones that are on the desk, they're not really working, okay? They're not working. So this sounds terrible, but what really is there is a passion, and inspiration, and motivation. Because frankly, I haven't met too many people who give you a pregame speech better than myself. I mean, let's go champ. I mean, my boy's up there. Don't get me wrong. But that motivation, that pregame, that hype, that ready for life thing is something I really like to do. And, I think I did that as a therapist, and a lot of people that are going through addiction, you know, that I would see, trust me, they're running into a lot of people that don't care, that don't understand, or lie, or are just doing their job, you know. And so a lot of times I would be in there sweating. I'm telling you, by the end of my second group for the day, you thought I just was running outside or something, you know, because I would be up and moving and talking and encourage. I'd come home from work on those days where, you know, three groups a day, a couple individuals, some treatment team meetings, and I'd be like, fuck, I still got to go work out or do something. You know, I was exhausted. But I think the people that were in there getting treatment saw that. I think they saw it. I remember seeing it and going, wow. You know, so when I watched those old videos, it reminded me, right? And, well, you know, I say you can look back, but you don't have to go back. But I'd like to go back to why I did the podcast, you know, to bringing that same passion forward, right? To trying to put in a new spin to that rampage idea, right? The cognitive rampage is if a thinking rampage, but at least is to come at you with an enthusiasm. I mean, again, if you read the book, I talk about enthusiasm is what you're after. We all want to seek happiness, right? We're looking for this definition of happiness, a moment, a fleeting moment that we collect or create by our collection of thoughts at that moment that we choose in our own perception. When we apply that perception, we then can create that feeling, that moment of happiness, right? Anger, or substitute the emotional feeling at any time, thus then create that, right? So this happiness became too vague, is why I wrote about enthusiasm, right? You can see the enthusiasm on people, right? It's hard to look at somebody's enthusiastically doing something that's just looking at you like, yeah, I'm really excited. Yeah, I'm enthusiastic about this. I really am, right? You can see that, right? Happiness, sometimes somebody's happy and they look terrible, right? But like, what? No, I'm chilling, right? So it's still this fleeting kind of moment that we create with our own thoughts and perceptions that we choose to at any given moment based on the circumstances and a lot of other input I could ramble off to you, right? But enthusiasm is what you're after. right? Trying to find that. And any which way you can find that enthusiasm, I'm saying, go for it. I used to say, if somersaults work for you, then fucking do that. You know, whatever finds and pushes that enthusiasm for you, who cares, right? And it's hard to tune everyone else out. And I will tell you that that line between walking the, trying to practice humility, remember, it's not something you're going to become. You're not going to just be humble one day. The fact of calling yourself humble is, well, oxymoron to begin with, right? You're not humble just by calling yourself a humbled person. Side note, that's why I never understand why people say they're so honored to get an award. Think about it, what they're saying. I am so honored. You are honoring me. Yeah, I'm so honored to get this. Right, just process that for a while. Back to being humble and walking that line. That line between trying to be humble and open to other people's opinions, perceptions, competence, experiences, right? And being open to that so you can grow and learn from that and absorb some of that in along the way. But not lose yourself or what your principles are, I should say, rather than yourself, right? And walking that humbled line between that confident, enthusiastic, right? And that's a kind of the walk in life, really, which, again, there's no notes for that. There's no notes to understand when you're maybe not trusting yourself a little less, right? When you're actually leaning toward too much advice and you're pulling in different perspectives with too much foundation to them, right? And we forget kind of our principles, our philosophies, or we begin to lose our enthusiasm. And I think this is joined because I write about how enthusiasm is not just a state where we necessarily create like happiness, but there's a way to get there, that we can become enthusiastic. First, we have to become competent, right? Think about something that you do that you're enthusiastic when you're doing. If you've been around for a while, you know this. If you read the book, it's a recap. It's good. Even I need it. So to get enthusiastic to do that activity, well, you had to get confident at doing that activity, right? Which means you had to get competent first, right? You had to learn how to do something, fail at something, gain some experiences that enough that gave you a reward that led you further to a confident that you knew doing that activity makes you enthusiastic, aka happy, right? Aka happy in that moment. Now, don't get me wrong, we can be enthusiastically angry as well. But that's how we can get to that enthusiasm, right? Not just a state, because if we, it's about putting ourselves in a state, well, then your thoughts thus create your feelings predict your behavior. And, well, as people have told me, and deliver your cognitive rampages in short little pieces, because that's all I can absorb. And I think, well, you selfish fuck. Right? What if somebody wants it longer? What if I'd rather flow out, right? So, you know, when you're thinking about doing that, lay that out, right? So rather than give you the full steps, I'm kind of feeding you with a fire hose, if you will, a whole bunch of steps to it, because again, I'm just flowing tonight. So to find that enthusiasm, we can map ourselves there. We can get competent about something that gains us experience, right? So when we seek out competence, this is self-creating experiences, right? Rather than letting the world experience us or give us experiences, right? Or sitting around going, well, it'll happen, it'll just come to me, right? We go and create those experiences by seeking competence. When we seek competence, this creates experience. Through experience, we become competent, right? Competent is knowing both sides of the argument, right? Competent doesn't mean you can just argue one side. You know how to do it both ways, right? This becomes a confident way. So now you're able to perform this task with some enthusiasm, right? So enthusiasm is something we can map toward, right? Because, well, we will go back there, that state of happiness, right, we can create with ourselves, right? There is no truth. I've said it a bunch of times on this podcast right now, and I'm talking in the human physical realm here, right? Not on some realms we may not understand, right? Because in the end of all of this, all of my talk and what people know and research and all this other stuff and beliefs and religion and anti-religions and anti-this and pro-this, at the end of all of this, and the smartest person of this and the most studied of this, at the end of all of this, we're basically oxygen breathing, bleeding human beings that, to the truth, only know what we choose to believe and digest as being our truths in life as we know it and believe it in the present. Now, that's at the end of it, right? Me included, and all that. Some more knowledgeable here and there, and we can use those mentors and well-studied to know this. But at the end, so far, is what I see is we all tend to, well, die the same, if you will. Some more painful than others, don't get me wrong, but in the end, that happens. So what they know, or what you knew, or what we all combined together to know as a group, and what most experts say, and what researchers say, but then combined with this, is quite, no matter, you can know all that in the end, It's what you believe, and this is why I say there is no truth, at least to what we know in our physical realm and world here. So if we want to say there is no truth and we want to create a state of happiness, then simply the state of happiness is a feeling, right? A feeling that we conjure up with what we think. Most people get stuck at the idea of separating the feeling and the thought, right? But you can. I promise you, you can, right? So what you think creates what we feel. We all know this, right? If you're paying attention, what we feel then creates, or at least predicts, how we will behave. So if happiness is something we can then create just by what we think and challenging by what we believe or reshaping it, then, well, there's no truth to anything we think we might be feeling in the present, except maybe what we can watch, right? Here's the little curve of this. Even myself, right, when I can't keep up with my own thoughts, whether they be positive or negative or constructive or rational at all the tricky ways I'm talking about how we think, there's one thing that I can't think my way out of, which is my behavior. I can look at my own behavior. So I can look back over the last 2 days, 3 weeks, whatever it is, whatever I'm looking for, whatever I'm trying to find, I can go back as far as I need to. Sometimes you got to go back further, right, just to get a good study sample, if you will, on yourself. But what you do over time, 3 days, again, 3 weeks, 24 hours, 3 years, what you have been doing, what behaviors you have been performing, ritualistically or in routine or because of necessity, like job or kids or something, whatever you're doing is saying a lot about what you believe. So you can construct how you think all you want to, right? You can cognitively reconstruct your feelings to create perceptions and moments, right? You can do all these things, but eventually you can't get away from yourself, or you'll realize you have found a way to fool yourself. So what doesn't fool you is the simple observation of your past behavior of yourself now. But again, here you have to be careful when you're analyzing your past behaviors and you're doing that openly with other people, because, well, bias slips in. There's a great new podcast that Malcolm Gladwell just dropped where he's talking about memory. It's about, Brian Williams. Yeah, I think it was Brian Williams who lied about being the helicopter that took fire. Really interesting podcast. That'll cover you about memory, really. That'll do it real quick for you. It's a beautiful, well-put-together podcast, too, called Revisionist History. But anyway, memory is shit. So as you start to observe your own behavior out loud or write it down, that's why journals are always good. I know it's kind of a cliche thing that people hear and they do, but keep one. Hell, my journal led to, you know, the Cognitive Rampage. It fed into that in the book. Your journal you've been keeping may be your book one day. It, I mean, it already is your book, really, if you look at it. But if you keep journal, it's a great tool to kind of track your behavior. Even if you just do a behavioral journal is another good way to do it. Instead of trashing your journal, if you will, with your racing thoughts and emotions and things and or thoughts and ways of thinking, what words you're using, which are all helpful ways, right? The cognitive approach is very helpful, but in the end, it's not going to do it for you. You got to bring them all in, right? So you can analyze that, but maybe keep a behavior journal on top of maybe a thoughts journal, because the behavior journal, you're just going to write down, I did this today. I went here. I ate this. I chose not to do this. I chose to do this, not about what you're thinking. What you're thinking is for the other journal or a different page. But you keep a behavior journal, you can then look back over a period of time and see what your behavior was, and then see if you've now begin to trick yourself or rationalize other things yourself away from, well, what you're actually doing. And I'm connecting this by saying, when you're looking for something that makes you enthusiastic, what were you doing? What was it when you looked back? What could it be, right? So how do I get back there, right? This is where the podcast for me links into this. I looked back at behaviors that I did, and I looked at, wow, why was I doing it then? Then I could go into what my thoughts were back then at that behavior, a behavior I could observe as being enthusiastic, and then say, all right, let's go back there for a minute. If this is how I was behaving, then I have walked myself cognitively down the wrong road. Imagine that you can overanalyze yourself, right? I should have put that warning in the Cognitive Rampage book, especially in the RSA chapter, that you can overanalyze yourself down into the woods to where you, because remember, the mind and the thought is not going to tell on itself. I know it's kind of weird to think about, but you only have your one mind to observe the one mind that's functioning, but even it wants to save itself because no one wants to be the one in the principal's office. So, of course, the mind's going to save itself, and as you're saving your thoughts to kind of keep you or push you or drive you this way due to certain beliefs and emotions you want to believe and not want to face, or, you know, maybe just how you're feeling, you can look back and go, wow, well, my behavior then was like this. How and what was I thinking? What was I doing? And then you can begin to use behavior to also fight thoughts, emotions, bad days, bad years. You can use behavior the same as you can the cognitive approach, right? That rational analysis, reframing the beliefs, judgments, the understanding we shape our own feelings and we shape our own behaviors, right? But the behaviors that we've done recently or in the past, these are evidence fossils, if you will, that we're able to look back on when we can clearly jot them down. That's why I'm telling you, a behavior journal is something worth keeping. People will tell you about keeping journals, and I've said that. Journals are great. But there's a journal where you're keeping thoughts in a journal, keeping a thought tracker, if you will, maybe an emotions or feeling, or what happened, or what had happened, or what is happening, or what happened was. You may keep in that journal, but a behavior journal is different. Again, use it. Write down when I behaved, right? And you can keep track of this. Unless you've been doing a podcast for 5 years, then you're in luck. Then you can look back and look about what you talked about, what you were doing, why you were doing it, right? Then you can begin to apply then the cognitive reframing or even the cognitive replacing, because it's easier to adapt beliefs that we once had ourselves that we knew were beneficial to us, our lives, and those around us. So when you can track your own behavior, you can then pull yourself mentally from the weeds that you may have gone too far down, which is a possibility, with over-analysis and becoming over-aware, if you will. I would warn you about over-awareness, right? Nobody likes the too-aware person, right? So we do that, again, to ourselves. So then we use the behavior approach to then check our mental approach, our past behaviors, and then watch in our behavior journal as we're willing to then challenge whatever beliefs may be holding us back from actual different behavior. We can then now challenge those beliefs that we've allowed to concrete that are enabling our behavior, if you will, or handicapping our behavior in some fashion, because we want to be back to that enthusiastic state. We look back, we can track it, we can see it. We can then use our behavior approach to assist that mental approach, right? And pull us back to whatever that is. And then you start seeing clearer, then all the other small things help, right? And, you know, the activity, the eating, the socializing, all these other things start to come back in too, because then your mental and your behavior begin to get in unison at the same time. And again, it's that enthusiasm you're after, that inspiration if you're after, however you find that, however you get that, whatever pushes you the next day, who cares? Feed yourself with it, man. I mean, just have overdose on motivation and inspiration if you have to. You know, talk to yourself, find ways to find the flow, find behaviors that make you excited. You don't always have to find behaviors that are challenging. See, there's levels to this. There's levels to wanting to challenge yourself. That's why I did that whole personality inventory in the back of the book, man, because you can go through things, because it's not consistently always about challenging yourself every day. If you read every meme, it tells you, shit, I should be taking over the world, climbing a mountain backwards, saving the world, and developing some cancer curing medicine, right? I mean, it's just, you just have to go and achieve and go, and it's okay not to, that we can not have to take over the world. There can be patience there, right? We can slow down on that and look back and find a way to be enthusiastic, a way to motivate yourself, inspire yourself, you know? But how's that for your 10-minute mental work? Cram it all in for your 10-minute mental potential there. Well, that's the whole gist of it, man, is the mental potential is just that. It has potential, but potential also means potential for failure, potential for overwork, potential for self-confusion, right? So our mental potential, yes, is limitless in itself of how we can create ourselves to feel in a moment. But the mental potential is limited. It can only function so much without behavior to meet it halfway. And that behavior is where we find our true beliefs, our true facts, the paths back. We can walk our behavior back and begin to see why. And it's great to have both journals too, because then what I was able to do, I just kind of wrote it all. But I didn't know what the hell a behavior journal was then. So it was just write this stuff, you know. But when you have them separated like that, is you can go back and look at what behaviors you did that day. Well, and look a couple days, couple hours or weeks back or something in your just most recent writing in the regular journal to see what had happened. What were you thinking? What were your emotions and thoughts at that day? And see if your behavior doesn't damn near go, well, of course I laid in bed all day and ate 85 Oreos. What the fuck? Of course I did. Look at what I was going through that week or that, you know, that month or that year, right? We can look back and then not be so judgmental of ourselves and our inability to move or motivate, right, or do something or do behaviors we are telling ourselves we know we should do. We can be easier on ourselves to say, hey man, this is what we were experiencing at the time, right? The mental game we know only goes so far. It can be powerful in the moment. You know, I reference it many times, is the mental game is strong enough to at least bring you down from the red line, you know what I mean, to make sure you don't catch a case. You know, that cognitive approach off rip, excuse me if I snap back there, but that cognitive approach off rip to all them out there that are just riding that hair temper, if you will, just chilling. You know, that cognitive approach, man, it's good. It'll bring you down off that red line. It'll keep you from doing the 10 to 15, you know, maybe even life. You can use that cognitive approach. It's strong. Right in the moment, it's strong. It's not going to, like, cure it, end it. I mean, you're not going to reframe your way out of dealing with some treacherous environments or some traumatic environments you may be experiencing or moments at the time, right? You can think all you want to. You can't think our way out of that. But you can in the moment. So that cognitive approach in the moment, man, that can work that red line. It can bring you down from the panic attack, or it can bring you down from the hair trigger. It can pull you back. But then you got to be able to implement that behavior. You got to change the behavior behind it. When you use those two, then you can start developing other tools. You can go on to the other things and start exploring different ways, biomechanical ways, however the hell you find it. But these are the things that I think begin to add on and make it better. But that foundation is between what we think and our behavior and, you know, the environments we choose to put ourselves in. And a lot of talk about environments, right? What environments you work in, what you live in, where you eat, all of these things. But there's an environment that I'm going to tell you is pretty important, if not as important as that social environment, that physical environment that you put yourself in. It's your own mental environment. Your own mental environment, right? What's the weather like up there? Well, no matter what the weather like is up there, it's cool because weather changes, right? I used to say that in addiction clinics, right? And point up at the head and say, hey man, what's the weather like up here? We know the weather at home. We know the weather out there in the facility. We know the weather back home. What's the weather like up here? What's the environment like upstairs? Because when that's stormy, boy, whoo, it's hard not to see everything else be just as stormy, right? So environments do play into our being, our who we are at the moment, or even who we'll be tomorrow. Or the rest of the night, or tomorrow morning. But it's not the end all. Can't reframe your way from cancer, right? You got to do something, right? I'm just using those short end memes. But if you pile all those memes together, man, wow, it can be too much, right? So it's the enthusiasm you're after. Use the thoughts. Challenge them. Challenge what you believe. If you find, even if there is a separation between what you believe and what you think, however it is, we can challenge those things. Use the behavior to change what we think, and use what you think to change your behavior, right? And check the environments, but more importantly, check the environment upstairs in your own head. What's that environment like? What are the environments that your eyes and ears, what are they taking in, right? What are they sucking in there? Are they sucking in a bunch of negativity, that word's arguable, right? We can protest the word of negative and positive, but shit, on the level that we live in, man, you know what I mean. What are your eyes taking in? Because what can be perceived as positive that we're taking in, like I've even said, competence, right? Getting competent, learning more, right? This can be perceived as being good, but man, you dive too much into WebMD when your toenail's having a bad day. Holy shit. You go hospitalize yourself two or three times, right? So we can dive too far into the competence to where we then lose ourselves mentally, right? That sometimes it's okay to just kind of be back in the present or just not want to know. So what are the environments that your eyes and ears, what are they taking in? Not just the physical environments either, right? The pollution, the EMF, my God, whoever you're listening to, I just got to stay at home and it's safe and drink filtered water through some glacier. You know what I mean? It's crazy out there. So what are you taking in through the eyes? What are you taking in through the ears, right? Because what's coming in there is also what's creating that weather up there. You know, what we're taking in, that adds to it too. What we choose to do with it, with those words and those moments, powerful, yes, they can bring down the redlining, but they're not going to give you a sustained change over time. Otherwise, you can take every moment, have to battle every moment, and reframe it to something that you can sit in, right? You'd be there all day talking to yourself, trying to enjoy the day, and then forget, oh my God, I forgot to enjoy the day because I was trying to remember to be mindful, right? You can walk too far into that. We got to use the behavior at the same time. Use our behavior to change what we think and how we think. Use what we think, what we choose to think, and especially how we think, to then change what behaviors we want, right? And then be careful what we soaking in, what we absorb, how humble, how down that tightrope of humility and confidence we're willing to swing each way before we realize the worry, what we're living, decisions we're making may not be fully what we're trying to do. But again, in the end, man, we all really know anyway, right? But for me, if it gives you kind of, maybe that could work. A little bit of hope, a little bit of something. Then it's worth doing it. I mean, just flowing to you this way with no notes, back to the way, you know, it was when this got started. It was cool. You know, I wrote down three words: toil, spirituality, and everyone else. And I don't know why those words came to mind, but they did. And I said, that's just what I'm going to write. And, you know, the toil, I think I've talked about, you know, I think I've kind of covered the idea of, you know, where toil lives, right? The bad feelings, the give them your labels, depression, sadness, whatever these things, they live in that kind of that toil. The need to make a decision or the indecision, right? We kind of live in there, and whatever small decisions it may be, there's toil. And in those moments of toil, well, that's where we find all those adjectives and collections of symptoms, right? But, you know, when we just make a decision, when we just choose, you know, I like what Patricia says, man. She goes, just choose one of them, because what happens? You're right back to where you were? Yeah. I can't say any better than that, right? I could walk you down all this short-term pain, long-term pain shit. But that's the truth. You make the decision because at least now you're just dealing with the effects from the decision, and at least the toil's gone for the moment, and then you can just make the next decision that you have to, right? I'm not saying don't take time to think about it, right? But again, don't overanalyze it, right? Just make the choice, yeah? And toil's caused by ourselves, that tightrope, right? I was talking about where humility is on one side and the practice of it, but then also the confidence that we find and the enthusiasm we find in that confidence that we have in ourselves or what we choose to do and what we believe, right? We find joy there, that aka happiness on that other side. And the more humble we tend to become, we can also find that stoicness, that also happiness, if you will, the flatlined happiness perhaps, or maybe full of joy on the humility side too. But why also... Well, having your boundaries of where your principles lie and where your philosophies lie. And this, I tend to think if we cross our philosophies, if we cross our principles, that's where I think we tend to get lost, you know. But you got to know your principles, right? You got to know what your philosophy is. You got to know what it is. There's a good book out there that you could read that'll help you do that. A lot of people don't know that. You all do, though. So spirituality. It's a terrible segue, right? Yeah, I don't need segues. So spirituality, I've wanted to talk about it a lot on the podcast before. You know, one of the original podcasts, Steve and I did, episode 2 or 3, shout out to you, Steve Stone. We sat down and talked spirituality, I think, for like 2 or 3 hours. We had another one with a friend of ours named Ronye Hawkins. He's been on the podcast a few times. I met Steve, but anyway... You know, we brought that topic up a lot, and it's hard not to say, well, are you talking religion or spirituality, okay? Because I'm not religious, I'm spiritual. I mean, this is, I get it, or any other ways, there's tons of words that come up with that idea, but I never really talked about it on the topic. Now, there is one Facebook Live video that's out there where I was out in the desert of Arizona with the Rose herself, Patricia. I think my hair was mohawked at the time. And I decided to talk God and spirituality live on the drive or something. But that was just letting it loose, I guess. But never really brought it to the forefront, if you will, on the podcast. I've had some guests that have come on and talked about their views of spirituality in multiple different ways, whether that be through psychedelics or painting or love or social gatherings, however it was, right? But I've never really talked about it myself. And I'll just point this out. I mean, for those that want the science and the research of it, there's tons of research out there that shows that, well, prayers help. And people that think that people are praying for them, right? People that do believe God or Allah or anyone or Jah, you pick it, is watching out for them, well, tend to perform better at surgeries and recovery and these things. That's just research that's out there done by the scientific method. Now, whether it's a real belief or we argue any of the stories to be legit, that's just the scientific method proving that being somewhat spiritually connected or religious or belief of a thing is beneficial. Not just a positive mind state, because there's also research that shows having the positive mindset, the optimism, this is amazing. There was a great article about a lot of veterans, and I'm talking veterans that were prisoners of war, kidnapped, tortured for 30, 60, 90 days, and they interviewed them years and years later, and their optimism for life, survival, seemed to be, in this research of this sample group, seemed to be the lifesaver, was true optimism and true happiness, was the reason they didn't suffer from trauma, post-traumatic stress, and continued mental illness, like a lot of those that did not have that mindset going through it, going through the actual torture, but also afterwards. And so the influence of our mindset or our optimism, these things help. This is science, this research is showing that. And the more and more that I hear it coming out, the more I can't help but step back and go, man, what science just said, that sounded a lot like that one book, or that one book, or that one writing, or that one speaker, or teacher, or mythical leader. Either one, I'm like, that's just a real scientific-y way of saying kind of what that says. You know, social togetherness is healing for you. We find that people immersed in supportive social structures and social groups or tribal communities tend to have a more optimistic outlook on life and recover from things faster. Love your brother like your neighbor and help each other out. I'm just saying, it starts to lean that way. So I just see a lot of tyranny of words, if you will. I see a lot of Stuart Chase-isms in the scientific world as much as I see in the religious or I'm spiritual world. You tend to, I see it. I see those crossovers and those medians. And, well, it can help. And if I'm going to say somersaults work for you, if that works, do that. Well, I don't care what anybody tells you about some factual thing about a story that didn't happen or science proves that this is this and we were dinosaurs and I'm in. Oh, cool. But if it works for you, then do that. So to attack anything by anyone, from anyone, or to attack on anyone else, which I've been guilty of, I can't help but think at the end of this, we're all just dead, and some of us knew more about this, and some of us knew more about that, and some of us had this, but in the end, nobody fucking knows, man. And maybe in your heart and faith, you know, man. And well, research would tell you that those that do have that faith or whatever it is, well, they do better, man. And prayers work. Science says so. I'm just saying. So, I don't know. So anybody out there that needs it tonight or from anybody else, man, I send you prayers, man. You got people praying for you. You got people wishing you luck, whatever they do. But I can promise you this, man. I've been in some risky situations. One of those was an atheist. And I'm telling you, when that fully automatic weapon went off, he did say, oh my God. I'm just saying. You know who you are, homie. I'm just saying. You know? The idea of spirituality can be whatever you make it. If it works for you, then do that. If it doesn't work for you, then don't do that. It's worked for me. It's worked for others, according to science, you know? So maybe we'll talk more about spirituality or religion or...
I'm just connected.
Whatever. However you say it. I dig it. I dig. Whatever works for you. You know? We'll probably bring that up more. And to everyone else. I think my message there has kind of been repetitive. And to everyone else, we're all just like you and just like everyone else. Some people are bad, though. I will tell you that. I met some bad people. Not because their energy was off or something. You know, maybe my energy was off that day and I thought it and then I felt it. And then when I felt it, it made me behave something like gave me goosebumps and I shook and I'm, must be true. I mean, there's just, for real, there's some bad people who do bad shit. And there's some good people who do some good stuff. Do some wonderful things, amazing things, you know. But again, at the end, we all know just what we know from what we experienced. What our story is, right? What we felt at that moment or that week or that year or last year. Whatever we tracked in our journals even, right? And we're all just searching for what makes us all connect in this great big world. And for some people, maybe unconnect. So I guess the message to everyone else is, hey, I'm just meandering around just like you, looking for what makes us all connect in this great big world. Hope you're taking care of you. Hope you're living your cognitive rampage. Love you.